Since 1945, Weatherby's been building the finest firearms and ammunition in the world. And today, we're proud to continue that legacy from our facility in Sheridan, Wyoming. This is On Our Mark, the Weatherby Podcast.
Welcome back to On Our Mark, the Weatherby Podcast. Last week, we talked about a new cartridge. This week, we're going to talk a little more about that cartridge and a whole new gun.
New guns. It's that time of year.
We've got Adam Weatherby in the studio today. Welcome, Adam, to your studio.
Thanks for having me on, boys.
Welcome to your studio.
This is your guys' studio. I'm a guest. That's actually what I like about this podcast. It's fun being a guest.
Yeah, it's always nice when you come on. We're always talking hunting stories or getting into new products. So it's fun.
Yeah. Well, I kind of come in for the fun ones. I mean, I'm not going to lie. You guys do fun ones without me.
Yeah, we've had some turkey hunting podcasts that we thought about inviting you to.
I should listen to those.
You know, we got like in the weeds with 25 RPM last week with John Baumgartner. Mm-hmm. We've been trying to get him on the podcast since he started working here.
He literally said, he's like, I thought it was important that this would be the one that I do because he is usually in a shell. So
yeah,
it's great.
You've got to spend some time with 25 RPM this year.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear your thoughts on it.
Sure. No, I've definitely been able to get out in the field with the 25 quite a bit. It actually kind of changed, several things changed actually throughout the last couple years of working with the 25. And so, yeah, I was able to get out in the field with some old design stuff on the 25, some new design stuff, some different bullets, and several different rifle models as well. So, I think, you know, at the heart of it, I'm excited. I think it's roughly our 17th introduction. It depends. Some of the 375 Weatherby or 220, you know, there's some different things that if you count. But we're going to call it the 17th cartridge introduction from Weatherby over the years. It'll be the fourth, I guess, under my leadership, 65300 being the first one.
Yeah.
2015, 2016, and was able to take that out and remember to get my first sheep and do some things on that. And then, of course, the developing the 6.5 RPM series, or the whole RPM, I should say, the RPM family.
Yeah.
Back in 2019, and then to see the development with the 338 a couple years later, and then now I think to really round it out, I think the 25 brings in kind of a complete package.
Yeah. So some people have asked, like, a lot of people ask what the next one is, because we've done a couple now, and so third being 25. Why 25? Why not 7? Why not 30?
We had a lot of those discussions, you know, and everybody has their opinion on what our next cartridge should be. I think what's important maybe for me to communicate too is new cartridges are not meant to replace old Weatherby cartridges. And so by doing a 25 RPM, we're not saying the 257 Weatherby is obsolete. We're not saying it's slow. We're not saying it's worser. we're not saying any of those things. Just like the 6.5 RPM does not replace the 6.5 300. They're each for maybe a different customer, a different rifle, mm-hmm. or for a different purpose, different game. Somebody that's maybe driven more off efficiency, somebody that's driven more off speed. So as we think about the 25, like, it's not to replace the 257 Weatherby. It's to come alongside and complement. And many other cartridges that we have multiple cartridges per caliber. We have a 3378 Weatherby, not meant to replace the 300 Weatherby, mm-hmm. right? And so there's those sort, the 338, 378 is not meant to replace the 340 Weatherby. And so in the same way, the 25 RPM is not meant to replace the 257, but to come alongside and I think have a different purpose behind it.
That's very well said, actually. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. So on the 25 RPM, we definitely tailored that one towards those really high BC, heavy for caliber bullets. So it's because of that. Even if case capacity was the same as 257, which is we're a little less, we'd be slower anyway. But
yeah. And it's I think there's going to be folks that still want the kind of quintessential 257. They're going to want to maybe move lighter bullets. They're going to want to stick with that 1-in-10 twist and just have that speed game where they're pushing, you know, mid 3,000s easily, you know, depending on what they're shooting. And so I think there's those customers. And, you know, I know you guys talked about it last week, but the whole idea behind this was there's finally some development. You know, quarter bore, the 25, has been somewhat overlooked. We've had a 6.5 craze for a number of years.
Yeah.
I think lately that switched to the 7. And then coming back to your question of why the 25 is, I think we're switching now to see some momentum with the 25. With your 7 PRC and 7 backcountry, you know, 28 Nosler some years back to win the speed game. There's been a number of things happening in the 7 game. There's been a revival of the 280 Ackley, which is a similar, you know, case capacity to the RPM. So there's already a lot in that 7, right? But there's not a lot out there in the 25, and there's certainly, when we started this development, there's zero out there when we started the development in the production world for a fast twist 25. Now, apparently, my buddies down in Nebraska, Jason and the family down there, Hornady, was working on the 25 Creedmoor, which to me I think is awesome because then it came out in the midst of us doing this development. And as is normal, they do a great job. Hornady does a great job at launching cartridges like the 25 Creedmoor. It's going to be efficient, light recoil, you know, made for the high BC bullets. Yeah. It's right up their alley. And then when they launch, I'm like, oh, they beat us to the punch. And I go, no, actually, this is perfect. Mm-hmm. Because Hornady has the more the size and muscle to move bullet makers beyond themselves to start making these.
For sure.
You know, high, heavier for caliber bullets. And so now we have a lot of folks doing the 120 into mid-130s of the 25 that we got people on board with an excitement about fast twist, heavy for caliber stuff. And then we come on, you know, several months later, we roll out the 25 RPM, which does what the 6.5 RPM did to the 6.5 Creedmoor. It's the same deal. They're different purposes. So I think it's actually really good timing.
Yeah, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, all of the bullets that we're going to run in this new 25 RPM didn't even exist yet. So, Hornady
some of them, 2 years ago.
Yeah. So Hornady kind of being a driver in that, since they're bullet-minded, right, helped, you know, along with the burgers and things like that. It really kind of changed that whole 25 cal in general.
Yeah, and so I think it's fun that we then get, I mean, the BCs on these things are pretty spectacular on some of these 25s, but really light recoil. And so like this fall, I was out and my nephew was hunting and he doesn't do a lot of shooting. He's a youngster and I put him behind one of my 25 RPMs because I'm like, man, this is going to be a great caliber for him.
And low recoil.
Yeah, it's perfect. So I think it fits a fun space, and it's just not as crowded when you ask Luke back to it. Okay, well, you know, we've always thought, well, 30 RPM would be fun, a 7. There's a lot of them, but they're somewhat crowded. You go down to the 6mm, well, it's pretty doggone close to the 240 Weatherby. It already exists. So I think it was the third one to really round out this family of rebated rim cartridges that we developed.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it before on the 7. We'd be real close ballistically to 280 Ackley, like super
correct
similar.
And so we've all been loving the 280 Ackley. Yeah. I mean, look, you guys both hunted with it this year, didn't you?
Yeah,
quite a bit.
Yeah,
you killed your elk with one.
I did.
So
which is a great caliber as well. So I think timing wise is kind of fun. I think I know we've been, our 6.5-300 was 10 years ago, so it's been 10 years since we've done a launch of a super high speed Demon, right? But it's almost like, well, okay, we already have the fastest 30. We have the fastest 330. We have a lot of fast stuff out there. And so let's not go recreate something. Let's do something that's different. And there is no faster, fast twist.
Right.
Cartridge made for a fast twist, heavy for caliber thing in the 25. So it truly is a space that doesn't exist. Back when you start, you know, people don't know how long it takes, but when you start doing a program like this, stuff ends up launching in the meantime. But even from when we started this, the bullet development, especially now with 25 Creedmoor, changed. And we got more offerings as we were developing this.
For sure did.
So yeah. That was pretty cool. So,
yeah, I hadn't completely thought through the 25 Creedmoor is very similar, although there was already probably a 25 thing going on. We saw a rise in 25-06 in the last couple of years as far as rifle sales. But going back, way back to when 6.5 Creedmoor came out, that was probably the beginning of that initial 6.5 craze.
Yeah. Yes. That
then 6.5 PRC, 6.5-300. Like
26 Nosler. Yeah, absolutely. And then the 6.5 RPM. So there was a bunch of things in there for sure. So
Quarter bore revival.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, it's finishing out 25. We're technically launching it in 26, you know, so we're a little bit late on the 25 and 25. But frankly, we did a lot of hunting with it in 25.
We
did. A lot of development. Yeah. So, yeah. Which, yeah, if you're looking on the YouTube thing, that was my first prototype there with the rifle we're going to talk about here in a little bit, the Backcountry Capra, along with the 25. We actually changed some things on the case after that and sped it up and did some different things. But that was the that Ibex there, which is one of the coolest, prettiest animals I've ever had the opportunity to shoot.
That was such a good picture.
It's a Bezoar Ibex from Turkey. Just absolutely gorgeous, and was able to take that with a prototype of the 25 RPM, have that be the first one, and then kind of went from there this year where we all got out and did a lot of hunting. I had a fun hunt this fall where, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, but I did that Wyoming RPM series, we called it, but that Wyoming film of a 25, 6.5, and 338 RPM mm-hmm. for pronghorn antelope, mule deer, and elk, and that was kind of the whole goal of the year for mine. But I didn't know how it'd work because it's still hunting. But it was cool. Took a great speed goat with 25 RPM, and then was able to harvest a great mule deer buck in the backcountry, public land with 6.5 RPM, and then killed the biggest bull elk of my life with 338 RPM. So all in the state of Wyoming, all in 1 year. So
do you mean Idaho?
Yeah. We live in Idaho. That's right. That's right. Well, the tags are gone, I guess, now.
There's no more tags ever. No. They ran out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So it was fun. Done a little bit with, like, the lighter bullets, 107 hammer that we have, which is light for this one, right, for 25, all the way up to, you know, some of the heavier ones that we have too. So it was.
So you did an antelope too, right? That was.
Yep, that was the 25 RPM on the three Wyoming hunt ones. Yeah, nice. Yeah, and pretty much from everything that we've seen, you know, I mean, it's been tipping over animals really, really well. They've been shooting very accurate. You know, we've just done a ton in development over the last year or two. A lot of prototypes, not just us out using it. Some key folks in the industry really got behind it, and it's proven to be, I think, a really, really fun caliber.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 7.5 twists. So it's neat to have something really designed, you know, for this. So
I'm excited. I got to play with 25 RPM, and then we hosted that Riders event where we got to see quite a few antelope. Yeah. Fall to 25 RPM.
I was going
to
say, I maybe like a total of 10 steps, I think, for all of the antelope that were on the trip.
Yeah.
I didn't go very far.
It was a lot of quick off switches.
Yeah, that one was fun because we just had a host of different bullets on that one. We had people shoot the 107 hammer.
Yeah.
We had multiple guys kill with the 117 Barnes, and then a bunch of us killed with the 133 Burgers.
Yeah.
So it was kind of fun to see like the terminal performance on animals with all three different bullets that we were shooting on that trip.
I think my favorite kill shot 25 from this year was that JD's.
It was.
Oh yeah, mule deer.
On that mule deer from Nebraska, he shoots the thing broadside and it stands up on its hind legs and like does a back somersault.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It was amazing. It's like it was like a gainer.
It was pretty cool. I was filming him and he was shooting a 133 Burger on that one. But that deer was just staring us down. He probably stared at us frontal for 2.5 minutes. And
oh, JD, no way.
Yeah, JD was on the, you'll see the new Arca, the full-length Arca adapter for the Bastion stock or whatever. He was just on it on a tripod for 2.5 minutes.
Standing. Oh, wow.
Oh, he was sitting, but the, so he was like kneeling, but
okay.
He was on the gun for 2.5 minutes. And as soon as he takes those two steps, then he just boom and it backflipped.
That's fun.
It was pretty cool.
That was a really good shot.
That's fun.
Yeah. And then Jace, our buddy Jace from Guns and Ammo, he shot a good mule deer with 133 Burger, and it didn't go very far either.
Yeah, it's been doing well. I think, you know, at the end of it, it's always fun when we do a cartridge introduction, so it's great to be able to do one again. It's been 4 or 5 years maybe since the 338 RPM.
Mm-hmm.
And so
22.
Yeah.
Was it?
It launched like two weeks before I started here.
Four.
Okay, yeah. There you go. So, yeah.
I guess 4 years, yeah.
4 years.
Jeez.
Wow.
I feel like. Wow, man, time's going too fast.
Yeah,
needs to slow down.
Yeah. Adam, we kind of talked about the RPM case on 25 particular on how it optimizes heavy for caliber.
Yeah.
Do you want to maybe talk about the RPM and optimizing the six lug action for the Mark V lovers who are listening to this podcast?
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe what I'll do is I'll go back to the development of the RPM and then maybe we'll move into this new rifle eventually, which is probably why people are listening to this podcast.
That'll actually be a natural segue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. I think he was setting me up for
this. I was teeing him up on that one.
Okay. too bad I'm a bad golfer. you know, the RPM was actually in the making. We launched it, I think, officially with the 6.5 RPM in 2019.
September 19.
Yep. And that was after we moved to Wyoming. But even back in California, the whole idea was, could we, with the Mark V 6 lug action, which, you know, we always say this again and again, we don't have a short and a long. Normally, we didn't before this last year. In the Mark V, we had a long fat and a long skinny, a 9-lug fat and a 6-lug skinny. Now we have a 6-lug short. But along with that, it's like, man, it's such a svelte, skinny, long, but very light action. So when building lightweight rifles, it really allows for most lightweight rifles, you got to get as short as you can, and you just can't get the horsepower. So the premise of the RPM in the Mark V. Now, we do it in 307, and you know, you can build RPM. It's great in a lot of rifles, but in the Mark V 6-lug long action, we knew that we could make a really light rifle that still has Magnum performance. And so that was the premise of a lot of designing the RPM around the rebated rim so it still fits on a standard 473 diameter bolt face. Because of that rebated rim, but yet make a long, skinny cartridge, which a lot of trendy things are short and fat. Not necessarily with our physique as a person, but in cartridges. And so we developed the 6.5 RPM to work in the 6-lug long action Mark V. And so in 2019, we co-launched those two to try to say, hey, we have the lightest and fastest. You can get, you know, down in titanium to a 5-pound rifle, but you can still have Magnum performance. You're not shooting a Creedmoor 308 or those sorts of things that often was in the super lightweight rifles. And so we really went forward into that space with the Backcountry 1, if you would, and the 6.5 RPM back to 2019. And that's kind of like, fast forward now, which really cool, 6 years, came out 338 RPM. We came out with the Backcountry 2, the Backcountry 2.0. And now what's neat is in 26, we are launching the third member of that RPM family with the 25 RPM. And we have beat ourselves again. And that's what's really fun about the Backcountry Capra is we are coming in with the lightest production bolt action rifle on the market today, along with a new caliber to go in the mix of this. And so is that where you wanted me to go, Tyler?
You landed that plane.
Know how to fly, but I'm not very good at golfing.
Yeah, you brought that one home for sure. Yes. You were doing the circling.
Yeah. So that's what's neat. You think about the development here, what our team's been able to accomplish, different iterations of the Backcountry, different RPMs, and now we've led the way in lightweight rifles, and now with this introduction of the Backcountry Capra, we are the true leader in backcountry, lightweight rifles and cartridges that are purpose-built for it as well. So you don't just have to go up in there with a 308 every time.
Yeah, and it's like one of those things where we're building like a system, not just a widget, right? So it's all kind of all-encompassing. So yeah.
Then what's neat too, just if we talk about actions, I'll kind of do this before we go into the Capra, is with the reintroduction this past year of the what we called the Varmint Master, so which if you go back in the podcast, you can listen to that. But that we took the 6-lug long and we shortened it up and made a 6-lug short so we could reintroduce the 224 Weatherby, 22-250, et cetera. Well, that short 6-lug action is going to also enable us to get even lighter. And that's what's so cool is to be able to have. Now, that's not going to fit your RPMs, but that short, when we redesigned it, initially, like a 308 never fit in the old Varmint Masters that were made in Germany and Japan. Mm-hmm. And so these U.S.-built ones, we changed the action in the ejection port, where now the Creedmoor cartridges, 25, 6.5, 308, et cetera, 22 Creedmoor, will now fit in this short little action. So when we went to develop the Capra, we then had those two length actions to be able to get the weight down.
Yeah, I think it's really cool to kind of see those puzzle pieces come together when you go back and look at us bringing back 224 was for a reason, And you can kind of see how, you know, behind the scenes of how we were shifting things around to build essentially this gun too.
Yeah, so we hinted at this in the 224 launch podcast where we're like, well, we designed this action for 308 length, wink, wink, case.
But it's not available in that now. And that's something Luke and I, when we were, you know, really working on this, and obviously with Tyler with you as well, but that we just said, we had this rifle in mind when we brought back the 224 and the Varmint Master Action. Like, the idea was, wait a minute, we now could do a titanium six lug short and have the lightest production bolt action rifle available. And so here we are, less than a year after the launch of our Varmint Master, to come back and to have the Backcountry Capra and utilizing that action, it's pretty cool to come full tilt, I think.
Yeah, we basically already had the lightest possible action with the six lug titanium.
Yes.
The long version. Mm-hmm. Then when we went to the six lug short, I mean, there's not another starting point that I'm aware of on the market that's even close on weight, on just the action.
Just the weight of the action, I don't think a custom builder could start with anything lighter than what we started with. And from the get-go, the whole goal was, can we hit four, even? Not 4.8, 4.7. Can we start this thing at 4 pounds?
And I think the cool thing is, can you start it at four, and is it going to be usable, right? So there's all these things that go with it. It's like, yeah, we could make a gun, but then the challenge is making it usable, too.
Four with all the parts.
All the parts, yeah.
Yeah, and we, you know, I went actually fall of 24 up to Alaska with our first prototype of the Capra, if you recall. And an earlier prototype when I went to Turkey. So I've been taking the Capra around the block, and it's really cool to see the iterations. That's what's fun in development. Sometimes people say, what's your favorite part of your job, favorite part of... I think it's when you're at product launch day, because what has happened is often it's a couple years of meetings, trials, errors, prototyping, field testing, coming back, and then when you finally launch it, it's so rewarding because it's production. It's everybody in the company putting their hands on this thing. It's a true kind of team effort. It takes a village type of thing to launch a product like this.
There's a lot new on here. This is a new stock. This is a new barrel fluting pattern. This is a new action for us. I don't think we changed the bolt handle or the safety or the trigger.
Yeah. Well, first ever blind magazine and stuff, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, that was the goal with barrel lengths that were still, you know, that you could still get some velocity on some of them. And so, you know, so just to let our listeners know, it starts at 4 pounds and really pushes up to just under 4.5 on the action. We're I think it's 4.4.
Yep.
So it's 4 pounds for the short action. Obviously, your bore, you know, 308s can be the lightest because there's just, you drill out the bore larger, you know, so it's going to vary here and there, a half ounce here and there. But we're 4 pounds on a 17-inch short action lineup, and we're 4.4 pounds on a 21-inch barrel on a long action lineup. And short action cartridge, you want to go over the cartridge offerings, Tyler? Yep.
Short action is going to be your 308, 6.5 Creedmoor, 25 Creedmoor.
Are we launching it with a 22 Creedmoor?
Oh, there's been talks.
We haven't decided fully.
Yeah. I know it's launch day. I feel like we might be selling them. So
it's possible, but
we're recording this podcast fairly significantly ahead of launch day.
Yeah.
So
we're technically still a few weeks.
And then long action.
Long action is going to be your RPM series. So you're going to get 6.5 RPM and you're going to get 25 RPM. And then we've got 280 Ackley, which is a fun one. And then 270 Win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a little limited. There's no 9-lug version of this because we still have the Backcountry and Backcountry Guide.
And titanium in both. So I think that's what we need to look at is the families. You have this one as being the lightest. You're like, well, I want more velocity or longer barrel. Great. Move your way up into another one. I want carbon fiber barrel. Great. Move your way up into it. I want 9-lug. The purpose of this is light, period. It's functional and all those things. But so this is that. Then you can go to the Backcountry or Backcountry TI, the Backcountry Guide, the Backcountry Guide TI. Full family of Backcountry now, ranging from as light as 4 pounds all the way up to what's like a 9-lug backcountry steel, like the heaviest.
It's got to be like 6.8.
Sure. So
like
from 4 yeah. to 6.4 and everywhere in between, barrel length starting as short as 17 inches and going up to 24, 26.
26 on some of
those. So 17 steals. To 26 inches, 4 pounds. So a full variety, a price point wise too, because some's a, you know, different barrels, different action materials. Mm-hmm. So you're really ranging price wise. So a full range of things. Now, some people are going to say, like, is this gun too light? Well, that's for every individual to determine. I thought initially I was worried about that. And I'll be honest, in the initial prototypes, I kind of thought it was. And a few things that I realized is I think our stock redesign that we did by putting the just those kind of ergonomically appealing, if you would, grooves, especially in the forearm, helps you really anchor it down. And by the time you put a scope on there, and for many of us of a suppressor, we were shooting, I was shooting like a 280 or 65 RPM out to 700 yards on steel.
Yeah.
Sub MOA as comfortable as I would almost any other rifle.
I mean,
you did too, right?
Yeah. Same.
I feel like the first two 25 RPMs that I got, that was like kind of the first ones off the line that for a marketing event, like again, no special treatment. Those were both like 0.4 guns, like, and it's a 4.4 pound rifle. Like product development's like this, I'm shooting these better than any other gun I've ever shot. So it was pretty cool to see that there's just something with this package of on the harmonics and everything. And that just makes it shoot good.
Yeah, I think we struck a chord in 2019 when we launched the original backcountry. We way exceeded our original forecasts, and we're like, oh, there's really something to this. And I think there was a gap in the market from a kind of where we fall on like a custom, semi-custom, semi-production standpoint that we offer a whole lot for $3,500, right? And I think that resonated really well with the general consumer, and we've just continued to iterate with the backcountry series. And now if you're a guy that's like not even cut your toothbrush in half, maybe you just skip the toothbrush altogether, like this is your gun.
Yeah.
It's we all carried it around on hunts, and then I would go on another hunt, because I think between Brenda and I this fall we had 7 rifles scoped up for all our hunts. Mm-hmm. And the hunt after the Capra, you feel no matter what gun you take, you feel like it's a tank.
Yeah.
Like this thing is a game changer from its lightweight perspective, right? I mean, Luke, you soloed in second to last night elk season and just threw a Capra on your running shoes and ran in 5 miles and shot a bull elk the last morning of hunting season and packed it out. Like the Capra makes that kind of thing like fully available. Yeah, I mean, you have to live in a cool place to do that.
Trip, my son and I, we did a couple more since then too. Like we would go in crazy light, and we literally, it was like trail running with a gun.
Yeah.
And that's how we started hunting at the end of the season. It was like you cover so much ground so fast. It was great.
Yeah, we had identical. So you were shooting 280 Ackleys. We wanted to really test that recoil on like what would be our heaviest recoiling gun. But like we had identical ones, and with the, you know, we didn't skip on the scope. We had a, you know, VX6 Gen 2 and a Banish backcountry suppressor, and the setup was like 6.4 pounds all in, gun and suppressor. So, and you're shooting pretty heavy recoil and not that bad.
You guys were shooting the heavier burger too, weren't you?
Yeah, 168 burgers as well. So that was kind of like the...
That was like the worst.
That's the worst. And we were shooting out to 700 yards.
Like hitting the, you know, we usually paint on the middle of our steel about like lung size.
Yeah.
You know, about the size of lungs. And I mean, I know on my 6.5 RPM Capra I was shooting. I was hitting lungs every time at 700.
I was very confident to 7. I actually laid down on my elk hunt. I laid down on a really nice bull at 700 something yards and was confident in the setup. Was fairly confident in the shot, was just not confident in the situation because there were so many cows running around and he would not be still. So solo, I just didn't feel good about it. So I ended up getting way closer, but I would have taken that shot with that rifle for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
If the conditions were right.
I shot my mule deer. Golly, I can't remember now this season. Kobe would know, but I think it was around 500 that I shot my mule deer on 6.5 RPM, and I was very stable. You know, I did put... you know, a little Spartan adapter on the bottom, had a bipod, but I was real stable. So maybe we could, can we go through the features for
Yeah, I say let's break down every single one just because we talked about the stock, but let's kind of go through all of
them. I was going to say one last thing on recoil, and then let's do the features. I was talking to some people this week about this gun, and with that 280 Ackley, at the range, you feel it a little bit. Like when you're getting dialed on your scope, like you feel the shot. I'm not going to say there's no recoil.
And it does jump up.
It does.
Because it's so lightweight, you get a lot of muzzle.
There's a little bit of muzzle rise.
Yeah.
But it's accurate and it's on target.
Yes.
That's where it's like you want to have a spotter to help you call a shot, especially if it's a longer shot, because you're probably not going to see your impact through your scope. In the field, I shot quite a few animals this year with it. Didn't even give it a second thought on recoil. Like, you don't feel it at all. It's pretty nice.
It is. I think people are going to get worried. I do think, you're right, before we go to features, one of the biggest questions about this rifle is it too light? Mm-hmm. Which I think is a great discussion.
Yeah.
Right? My car's too fast. Man, that stinks, you know? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like saying your wallet's overfilled with cash, your car's too fast.
My abs
problems.
Are too defined.
Right. You know? My biceps are too bulgy.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And so I think that's the question. We can tell you from hunting this year, it works. We've hunted animals at different distances, different types of game. And that's what's cool is you can take a 4.4-pound rifle elk hunting and be confident out to 500 yards. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
We're not talking like, you know, a Creedmoor or something. We're talking like 280, 65 RPM stuff with 4.4-pound gun. But if you want to go down to the 4, you still shoot a 25 Creed or something. I mean, that's a great choice still for a lot of backcountry hunting.
For sure.
So I think it works. I think it's fun. And here's the thing about it. There's a lot of things. This is what I'm excited about. And then we go in features.
Yeah.
Very rarely can you kind of put a stake in the ground and make a claim and like own it. Like accuracy, well, there's so many variables. Yeah. There's a lot of variables. A scale, if it's calibrated, does not have variables. When we use our scaler on here and we push 0 and we put the gun on there, that's data. That's science, boys, right? And so what happens is, like, when we throw it on and it says 400, we can sit there and make a claim like, you're not going to go find anything else like this for the money, period. Now, maybe you could get some custom guy for $7,000 plus, but I don't even know.
I mean, those just have a bunch of holes drilled in the stock, basically, so.
Yeah. I mean, so it's pretty crazy to have, you know, hand-laid carbon fiber stock, all those things in this. So I think it's a pretty cool claim for us to be able to make and be the leader in it. Mm-hmm. So for us, I'm proud of our team. I'm proud of the innovation. I'm proud of kind of what we're able to finally launch to our customers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, and on these feature set too, for the money, we're kind of setting you up for success. Every feature was detailed to make it a shootable gun too. Mm-hmm. So. We've already talked pretty extensively on the titanium action. So we have been alluding to the stock. So the stock is a Peak 44 stock. Mm-hmm. If you guys are familiar with the Black Tooth stock, this is the Bridger stock. So it's kind of a modified version of the Black Tooth. So Black Tooth is already one of the lightest stocks on the market. But we're like, how can we make this thing lighter?
How do we make it lighter still?
Yeah.
So we shorten the fore and four grip up a bit.
Almost an inch,
An inch, mm-hmm. Yep. There are some...
We slimmed it down too significantly.
That's what I was about to say,
the forehand. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the ADL created some challenges. So like a blind magazine box, kind of ADL style. It with a traditional floor plate, you have a little bit of roundiness from the actual bottom metal. We lost that, and so we had to redo the shaping in that area. And I love where we landed because it basically all the way back to the trigger guard, you could grab it. I don't know why you'd shoot that way, but it feels comfy. Mm-hmm. There's a little hole in the bottom because Adam brought back a bunch of water from Alaska on the first one.
Yeah.
And we realized we needed a weep hole in that blind magazine box.
I brought it back, gave it to gunsmith, went on that Alaska hunt, season one of Aviators up there with Steve, and came back and gave it to the gunsmiths. And they went, they like literally dumped water out of it because we'd never made a blind magazine gun. And we realized, well, wait, a lot of times it's just your water if you're up there. And we were in torrential downpour. Will leak out your floor plate area, and it doesn't leak out. So, yes, there is a weep hole in this gun. Cool feature right there. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Is that going to be bullet listed on the website?
Weep hole.
Weep
hole.
Yeah.
And then we did some cutouts on the buttstock and kind of on the fore end. And what I actually like about the cutouts is you said – that a lot of times when people want to achieve weight loss, they just start cutting things
drilling out. Holes.
Yeah. Well, this has still got a good familiar look, and there's not just a bunch of holes in the stock. It still looks like a Sporter style stock. So
yeah, and like I said, on the front, there's a similar recess in there that's just a perfect finger groove and helps control, if you've got your hand on the foregrip, it helps control the muzzle rise quite a bit.
So I think to clarify, we were able to lighten the stock a little bit, but a lot of it was aesthetics and ergonomics too, that we were able to do by thinning things up and having it be better paired with the action, right? Yeah. And just the look and feel of the gun. And so it was, like Luke said, I mean, it's the forearm, it's all the way underneath shaped down here. So it's not just lobbed an inch off here and put a few grooves in there. It was really redesigned. And there was some iterations, like when I took on that turkey hunt, like, I think that one didn't have the grooves.
I don't think it did.
Was that right before the grooves?
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, it didn't have the weep hole before Alaska. And so us going out and putting and reiterating, like, we wanted it to be exactly right, which is cool.
And then two other features that are on the Blacktooth that this one does carry is it does have a slight negative comb to it. So when we're talking recoil management and all those things, it's going to go slightly away from your face too. It just goes to like the design and the ergonomics of the actual stock.
Yep, great point.
So, and then I feel like we don't talk about it enough, but the 3D Hex recoil pad that's on all the Peak 44 stocks right now, it's a honeycomb shape that, you know, when those honeycombs collapse, it kind of stair steps or disperses that felt recoil. So
it does. It does a really good job of helping reducing felt recoil. It's not magic. It can't reduce recoil, but it can reduce the felt recoil and spread out that initial shock over, I mean, you're talking milliseconds, but over a little more time, it just makes it more pleasant.
Yeah. Like the nerd talk is like it spreads out the time component, right? Yep. So it takes the same amount of energy, but because it's collapsing, it's spreading that out over milliseconds, but it's not just one hit.
On our initial design of the 3D Hex, we did some testing on that and graphs to show how instead of it being a punch, it spreads out over a longer period of time. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's science.
It's science. We're talking science today.
Because of science. And then on the barrel, we've got a double helix pattern on first time we've ever done that. So basically it's fluted one way and then fluted the other way, and it makes a really cool pattern. But it's twice the flute, so quite a bit more weight savings.
Yeah, it's crazy how we just kept coming back. Like, actually, I don't even know if that prototype had the double helix.
I think that one's spiral fluted.
Yeah, so it's just crazy. And then that one's the prototype even after Alaska, because this hunt was in March of 25. That one was in Alaska. So a lot of these things just came over a period of time where we're like, hey, let's get another half ounce to an ounce. Let's research it with the you know, and it's just a cool new look too for us to have a brand new pattern. I think is kind of fun. So, you know, along with the barrel too, maybe we talk about barrel lengths for a second.
Yeah.
Because that was a big point of conversation or maybe even contention.
Who even makes a 17-inch barrel?
We do. You know, we, from the onset, you got to remember, like, speed is in our, you know, I always say speed is in our blood, and then I think of drugs, so that's not right. But
you could say DNA.
Yeah,
maybe
DNA.
That's better.
Yeah. Yes, or velocity.
We call this double spiral fluted, a double helix. It's in our DNA. Yeah. So if we're going real sciencey.
Man, so much science today. And so we really wanted to offer both in the short and the long action of it what we felt was the perfect convergence of velocity and weight savings. Mm-hmm. We could have made all these just 16 and gone below 4 pounds and just called it good. Mm-hmm. But we didn't want to compromise it for the hunter that wanted the, you know, be able to stretch out a little bit with it. We tested what those velocities were, what those weights were, and we felt 17 inch for the short action and 21 for the long was that sweet spot. Yeah. As soon as you drop below 21 with your RPM cartridges or 280, you're getting down to where, well, you might as well switch from the 6.5 RPM to the 6.5 Creedmoor at a given point, right? If you're going to do that in 17 inches, we'll then go down. And so we weren't, you know, even numbers, everybody does even numbers for barrels, whatever. We weren't bound by that. It's like, let's just do whatever's best. And so that's where that 17 and 21 came in.
Which, not compromising on that, did lead to the double helix flutes, because it's like, we need to do it a different way. We can't just chop it off. So it's like, how do we do that? And it's like, well, now we have this design. So I think that's pretty cool. And there's something to that barrel with the double helix. I don't know if it is added rigid. Good. It looks cool. Added rigidity, all the things. But I mean, they flat shoot. So for a thin contour barrel.
been very impressed with the accuracy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really for me, the hardest part of getting used to the gun is just not having a floor plate.
Yeah.
You know, and not, yeah. you know, when you're done with the hunt, you didn't mm-hmm. shoot and you got stuff in your mag, you know, you're feeding them out of there. And so that's probably the biggest change for me in it was just, I'm not used to hunting with my magazine. Never had one before ever in a Mark V. But it's actually just one less thing to worry about. Spring and a floor plate. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just
yeah. So it, just in case you're not familiar with what Adam's talking about is since there's no bottle metal, essentially no floor plate, there's no way to hinge that open and release the extra rounds that may be in the magazine. So this is a top load only. You're just pushing the rounds in the top just like you normally would on a regular backcountry. But if you're going to unload it, you're basically cycling the bolt with as many rounds as are in there. So yeah. you're going to have to cycle it and then open it. And that's not exclusive to us. That design's been around a long time, but it's the first time we've done it.
Mm-hmm. But one less thing to really go wrong or have or, you know, whatever on the bottom. You got in floor plate, you got, you know, hinges and pins and latches and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. We don't have that. So yeah. So it keeps it simple. You know, obviously, I think one of the other things I'd like to just talk about is the amount of this that's made at our factory in Sheridan, Wyoming. From these titanium receivers being cut right downstairs from where we're at. Mm-hmm. Double helix pattern, you know, getting put in here, you know, the chamber, these stocks. I mean, the whole thing, it's really cool to see how much is being made here in Sheridan, Wyoming of this rifle too. So I think that's part of that proud kind of release thing too, yeah. is how much of those iterations were just done here at our place after we went out each time. So,
yeah. The name, what's a Capra?
A Capra is a goat. It's the we're talking about science.
Yeah,
science. Yes.
Is it a genus?
It may be.
We should have Googled these things.
I'm not scientifical sometimes.
I think it's maybe genus or Venus or something, but we'll go with genus. But it's Capra. It is the goat family, mm-hmm. and so obviously goats, mountain goats, and ibex, and all those things that are up there live in the gnarliest, steepest terrain kind of available. And so, you know, if you've ever been hunting any of those goats, they just hang out on the side of these cliffs. And so to have this gun be around that, that's where the name Capra came from. We probably spent 6 months back and forth over names, I feel like.
Naming stuff's so hard.
Yeah. It is. But I'm excited. But I think it's a cool name. And then
it tells a story about what it is, too.
Yes.
It's not just something that we picked because it sounded cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the play on words of it. It's on the screen there if you're watching. But the goat of all rifles, the Capra. Like, see what happened there.
Greatest of all times, goat.
If Michael Jordan was a hunter, he would probably shoot this gun.
I don't know. He might need a longer one. I don't know.
He is pretty big.
But yeah, and then to be able to, you know, it's kind of we're able to go on this hunt and shoot the ibex and shoot a Capra. Capra gun, Capra animal, kind of all in one, and have that be kind of the poster child hunt, which was the first animal with the 25 RPM and first animal with these, both prototypes. Mm-hmm. They both changed, the cartridge and the rifle, but to go out there and test and come back. So I think the name is fitting and fun, and we're having a good time, I think, overall with this thing. So, yeah.
I don't even know what else to say now. I think that's...
So I guess I'd say this. It's the type of thing where if you could get to one of our shows this year, and Tyler, maybe you can tell them where they might be able to get their hands on it. It's the type of thing, obviously drop by our showroom in Sheridan. Hopefully your dealer will grab onto it. And if not, like some of these shows that we go to is a great space. Like it's one of those, I think, you can't tell on the screen how light it is. And when we've gone around right to some of our events showing some of, you know, some people ahead of time, media and so forth, like,
Their
eyes pop out of their head.
When we went to NASGW in October, we had multiple guns in soft cases, and I was handing Adam the soft cases, and he stopped with the one with the Capra and 308. He stopped and opened it because he thought it was empty.
I thought it was maybe just a stock. Yeah. It wasn't. I didn't think there was a complete gun, so I thought, oh, okay, are we bringing the stock sample on this show? It was a completed, right? Like a done rifle.
It was the whole thing, all the parts.
In theory, you could throw this rifle very far.
We can do an advertisement off that, yeah. I think, Tyler. What shows could they go see that at this winter?
Yeah, so in January, we're doing the SHOT Show, which I think consumers can go on the last day maybe on that.
I don't know.
Sheep Show will be our first true consumer show. So we're doing that in Reno in January. Uh-huh. And then we're going to do Western Hunt, SCI in Nashville. And we'll be at like Pheasant Fest too. Kind of the bigger mountain ones will be those three shows.
Yeah. Okay. From the mountain standpoint, those would be ones. So it'll be Reno, Nashville, Salt Lake. Yeah. Yep. So a few areas, if you're around that area or something, it'd be cool to, you know, just come by the booth and take a look at it, I think. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think the other question, you know, people are going to ask is, you know, scope pairing up, suppressor, you know, those accessories, like, what do you want to do to it? There's two ways, I think, to look at the scope thing. One is, we'll get the lightest you can and make the lightest weight package. Others are, well, now I don't have to compromise my optics quality because my gun's so light. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit of what I did, to be honest. And stabilizing gives a little bit of weight to that gun, which is okay. But, you know, I think that 20-ounce scope, which there's a lot kind of in that space. There's a lot to offer where you get some good magnification, a decent objective on a 30-millimeter tube for 20 ounces. You can get down to some of those new 16-ounce and stuff if you want that light. So you can go either way, I think.
Yeah, I'm more apt to be like, I saved a lot of weight on the rifle, then I don't have to sacrifice other places. So that's typically how I do my accessories.
In the 280 and 65 RPM especially, I'd say get the best glass you can throw on there. And maybe care less about the weight, because you're still going to have a 600-700 yard setup.
Yeah.
And then on the super light short action with 17-inch barrel, I mean, I didn't do the ballistic charts on all those, but those are probably going to be, you know, inside of 500 yards as far as, you know, an ethical kill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not going to need to go as far with those. You could go real light with those, obviously.
So you don't need a big 55.
They do all come with a brake, yep, right, Tyler? They're all threaded. Yep. We got a brake, thread it's protector.
Standard half 28. Mm-hmm. So I ran a suppressor with mine all year this year.
I did too. I ran a Silencer Central Banished Backcountry, and man, that thing's super light. It did a great job.
Yeah, that was great. And then I've also ran the little AB Raptor, that one. Works good on this gun too.
Yeah. So. I've done both with and without, because like I've done some international stuff and traveling and, you know, like going to Turkey. I liked carrying a lot without the suppressor. It's just, even just that overall length is just so, it's just short. It's light. If you're doing any decent amount of shooting, especially it definitely the suppressor complements it very well when shooting. It is so stable with that.
Yeah.
It even when you don't with the brake, that muzzle blast is fairly close to you, you know? So like it is a good rifle to, it just depends on what your priorities are, you know, but it's a good rifle to suppress if you want it.
When this rifle launches and this podcast goes live, the tax stamp is
gone.
So yeah, there's no excuse. Go get a suppressor.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
After you buy like 4 or 5 guns.
Yeah. For
sure. Mark V Backcountry Capra, we're proud to announce the world's lightest production bolt-action rifle.
Yeah. I wonder what we're going to do next.
I got an idea.
I got a few myself.
I was going to say, if you want to know, there's a few things coming out in the next couple of weeks that are pretty different than what we've done before.
Oh, yeah.
We have some not light stuff coming out.
I was going to say, there's a nugget there. We got something pretty cool coming 1 or 2 weeks from now.
We're not
teaser.
Well, thanks for listening. Check out weathery.com and go find out more about the Mark V Backcountry Capra.